You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickard will be back with me on Monday. The newest installment in the Star Trek movie franchise is out, and the groundbreaking original TV series marks its 50th anniversary this year. For a lot of people at that time when the show came on, it was the first look at the concept of interstellar travel, alien species, mind-boggling technology. And the different incarnations of the show and the movies took us to distant stars, planets, and anomalies around the galaxy, sometimes beyond. Our next guest says Star Trek helped him get inspired to start looking at the sky, and in his new book, he uses the Star Trek franchise as kind of a window onto our universe. Andrew Fazekas joins us now. He's known as the Night Sky Guy. He's astronomy columnist with National Geographic and the author of Star Trek, the official guide to our universe, the true science behind the starship voyages. Andrew, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, good afternoon.
Well, talk a little bit about how Star Trek helped get you looking up at the stars.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, I like to call it as the like a Vulcan mind meld of two of my passions. And that's one is astronomy and stargazing, and the other, of course, is this wonderful science fiction franchise, Star Trek, that so many love. I mean, I grew up with Star Trek, and some of my earliest recollections are of both of these things, stargazing and Star Trek, just two going hand in hand. Because I remember my dad, who is a medical doctor and a researcher, always kind of encouraged me, of course, to get that inner science geek out in me, you know, making sure that I'm fostering that science geek in me. And we watched Star Trek back. This is back in the mid-1970s, probably one of the first reruns of the original series. And I would watch it with my dad every weekend. It would be a ritual for us. And I'd barrage him with all these questions about what Captain Kirk was up to. Where is the Enterprise? What is that planet that it's around? And question after question. And this resulted, I think my dad eventually bought a telescope. And we lived in Montreal, Canada, very light polluted city, still is today. And despite that, we would go up in our apartment building rooftop and look at the stars. We looked at the moon, the moons of Jupiter, Saturn's rings, and this just really just fueled my imagination and this love for the universe. And this has carried me on throughout. And so I always look fondly at Star Trek, always have, enjoyed all the reincarnations of all the different series over the years, and there's been 6 altogether, by the way, and 13 movies. And I've just love everything about it. And this book is really, I think, that result of that two passions coming together. It was just meant to be.
And you're trying to get other people on board, it seems like. Hey, if you like Star Trek, well, hey, look, there's this awesome galaxy out there we can check out together.
Exactly. You know, because not everyone is very familiar with the night sky. And I think a lot of people would be surprised to learn that there are a lot of real-life counterparts to objects that were pivotal in the plots of many of the episodes of Star Trek and in the movies as well. So real-life, if not the exact same objects, they're very similar objects that we can see in the night sky. And so what I'm hoping to do is get people who are not familiar with the night sky, who have never done stargazing and things like that, can go and take this book after watching an episode and step out their front door and look up and find some things just with the naked eye. Some things, maybe there's a few objects in there with binoculars or small telescopes, a little bit more challenging stuff if you like. But most of it are fairly easy objects, and it's a wide variety of types of objects that were encountered in Star Trek. So I'm hoping to engage families, you know, folks, the parents with youngsters as well, is to be able to go out, learn about science as well in the process, because there's a lot of science in Star Trek, and that's part of its charm, I think.
Well, Andrew, I love looking at the night sky. I am very bad at spatial relations. I'm basically an idiot. I can find the Big Dipper, Cassiopeia, and that's it. The moon,
yeah, you're on a good start,
the sun,
Rob.
If there are no clouds in the sky. So what would be a good thing, maybe from one of the Star Trek series or movies, that I could go out and maybe, if we get a clear sky, unlikely here tonight, and maybe look up and find and orient myself toward?
Well, very easy. Some of the easiest stuff is neighboring planets. Of course, we are always, when we're talking about Star Trek, the mainstay of all those adventures, of course, is the Enterprise starship visiting, going into orbit around planets, particularly what they call M-class planets. These are habitable worlds where life could possibly exist. And, of course, that's when the crew would beam down and have all their different sorts of adventures with aliens and such. But there are, planets that we can see in the sky, neighboring planets like Mars and Saturn, that are visible today in the skies. Actually, right now, over the course of the next few weeks, Mars and Saturn are particularly well placed for viewing with the naked eye. You can even be within city limits where there's a lot of light pollution, and you can see them very clearly in the southwestern sky just as darkness falls and any clear night. So even if you don't get it tonight, next few nights, anytime, you'll be able to see them. Mars looks like a very bright orange-colored star, and Saturn is actually next to it. On the left-hand side of Mars is another, as appears as a very bright yellow-colored star. And you can't miss them. They'll knock your eyes out. They're so bright in the southwest after sunset. And it's just amazing to think, you know, like Mars is a wonderful mimic almost of the type of world that Mr. Spock came from, known as Vulcan. Okay, he's a Vulcan, and he comes from a planet named Vulcan in the series. And Mars is a great analog for what type of planet, the look, at least the visual appearance of what Vulcan looked like in the series and movies. And funny enough, Gene Roddenberry actually pointed out a star in the heavens that astronomers, real-life astronomers, had been looking at as a possible home star system for a Vulcan planet. And sure enough, now astronomers have looked at this star system. It's called Eridani, 40 Eridani, and it's a visible naked-eye star, visible in our winter skies. And that particular star, it seems like, may hold planets, real planets around them. Now, could one of them be a Vulcan type of planet? It is possible. We don't know yet. Our technology is not at the point of being able to make that kind of identification. But it's kind of neat to think that we could look up in the sky and see Vulcan planet analogs in the night sky.
We're talking to Andrew Fazekas. He's known as the Night Sky Guy. He's an astronomy columnist with National Geographic, looking at his new book, Star Trek, The Official Guide to Our Universe. He's talking about real-world astronomy inspired by the world of Star Trek. We want to hear from you. Are you a backyard astronomer? Do you have questions for our guest? Is there Star Trek technology you wish we had today? Were you inspired by Star Trek at some point in your life? Oh, with a love of science, astronomy, rocket science, you name it. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment here on Central Time.
Captain's log, stardate 1513.1. Our position, orbiting planet M113. On board the Enterprise, Mr. Spock, temporarily in command. On the planet, the ruins of an ancient and long-dead civilization.
And in the studio, Rob Ferret for Central Time. We're continuing our conversation about the science of Star Trek, what Star Trek can point us to in the night sky. We want to hear from you. Did Star Trek get you interested in science, or other science fiction for that matter? Are you a backyard astronomer? Do you have a question about what to look for in the night sky? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Andrew Fazekas is with us. His new book is Star Trek, The Official Guide to Our Universe. Andrew, there was one of those M-class planets. Now, I know you're not in this book nitpicking what Star Trek got right or wrong, but they're always visiting all these other planets. They got that right. Scientists, astronomers are discovering a ton of, what do they call them, exoplanets out there.
Exactly. And that's I think part of the big excitement here amongst astronomers is that what we saw in Star Trek so many decades ago, and this goes back to the inception, we're talking 50 years ago when the first episode aired, that there are other worlds beyond our solar system, planets around other stars. This was back in, it's funny, because back in 1960s, you would talk to a scientist and they'd say, yeah, probably it just makes sense that there would be planets out there. However, would we ever be able to detect them? That seemed near impossible with the technology that we had at the time. And that's because planets, they do not emit light. They only reflect the light from their parent star, right? So when we look at all these planets, like I was mentioning before about looking at Mars in the southwestern sky in the evening and Saturn, they look like brilliant, beautiful, jewel-like shining little points of light in the sky. And that is simply because of sunlight just, you know, basically reflecting off the sand dunes of Mars or the very reflective bright clouds and rings of Saturn. And then that reflected sunlight travels through space and we see it with our eyes. And that is how we see it. Now, what this means for anyone hunting for planets around other stars, the starlight, the home star, is over a billion times more powerful in its light output than the planet's reflected light. So basically, the planet would be washed out in the brilliance of its home star, leaving us unable to pick it out of that stellar glare. However, now if we flash forward many decades later, back into the 1990s and beyond, we began to be able to pick out these planets, distant planets, because of their gravitational effect on their home stars. The stars we had sensitive enough technology, our telescopes were so sensitive starting in the 1990s that we were able to pick out the wobble, the gravitational tug and pull that these planets would have on their home star. And from that wobble of the star, we were able to calculate out how far away these planets were, how many these stars hosted, how many planets they hosted, and how large they were. Then we added another even more exciting method of detection of planets, and that's called the transit method of actually seeing planets go in front of the star in sort of like a miniature eclipse. And as a little planet would go in front of the disk of its home star, from our line of view, that starlight would wink out a little bit, dim ever so slightly. And that little dimming effect we could use to calculate out how fast these planets orbit, how large they are. And even now we have the beginnings of being able to detect the atmospheres of these planets. So we're actually able to start hunting for the holy grail in planet hunting, which is looking for Earth 2.0, a sister Earth out there, these M-class planets that Star Trek called, these habitable worlds. It's coming to pass. It's really amazing.
Andrew, I want to check out another phenomenon, a little funkier than a planet. The Enterprise crews often spent their time in some nebula or other. I learned from your book there's a lot of different kinds of nebulae, I guess, not nebulas.
That's right. Yeah, there are many different kinds of these gas clouds, and that's what nebula really are. We're talking about these gigantic, enormous gas clouds. Could be many light years across, so much larger than our solar system. And these clouds in Star Trek, in the universe of Star Trek, they played pivotal roles in being able to allow, say, either the villain ship or the Enterprise to hide out in, in these space clouds. That's right, because the sensors would be garbled and weren't able to function in these gas clouds properly. So in real life, these nebulae are sites of the birth of stars and even the death of stars. So there's really two major kinds of nebula. So the ones that give birth or are really like star factories, and they're very beautiful in their shapes. The Hubble Space Telescope has provided some of the most beautiful imagery. Some of the picture postcards that we know from Hubble of these gas clouds are some of the more brighter ones and the ones that are closer to Earth. And that is where it is a cloud, a nebula like that, that the Sun was born out of 5 billion years ago. So there's clusters of these stars that are born in nebula, and they shine in a kaleidoscope of colors, beautiful tapestry of colors, because of all the electromagnetic radiation that sort of bellows out of these baby stars, and they make the surrounding gas glow like a neon sign. That's where some of the most beautiful of Hubble images have come from. And so in real life, we see a whole slew of different kinds of these clouds, and even exploding stars like supernova produce these beautiful clouds that explode outwards. And that has been even a huge part in the storyline of many different series in Star Trek, of where the Enterprise has to rush away from an impending explosion of a star.
Andrew, as we wrap up, a lot more out there in the stars we get into, but I wanted to ask, have you made it to the new movie yet, or do you have plans to this weekend?
Oh, I was fortunate enough to get a preview screening of it earlier this week. Oh, you bet. I made sure I did. And I have to say, for Trek fans, it continues that legacy of the camaraderie between the crew members. I don't want to give anything away, but there is astronomy there. There's a neat planet, an M-class planet, and a nebula and an asteroid field that takes place. But there's a lot of humor, a lot of action.
Andrew, thanks a lot for joining us today. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, my pleasure, and live long and prosper.
We've been talking to Andrew Fazekas. He's known as the Night Sky Guy. He's an astronomy columnist for National Geographic. He's the author of the new book, Star Trek, The Official Guide to Our Universe, The True Science Behind the Starship Voyages.